A colleague and I were talking recently about women and money, and she said, nothing bad happens when women earn more money. And I got to thinking about my conversation with Barbara Hewson, the author of Rewire for Wealth. In her earlier life, under the name Barbara Stanny, she wrote Overcoming Under-Earning, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, and Sacred Success. And in this interview, Barbara and I talk about why women are chronic under-earners, why we are conditioned to undercharge for our services, leading to this wide gap in the pay scale for women entrepreneurs. And it's a prison of our own making. It's a psychological jail that we have subjected ourselves to and not allowing us to see ourselves in a bigger light with greater value. In this interview, Barbara unpacks how to notice the conditioned thoughts, behaviors, and responses that are keeping you stuck where you are, and how to rewire your brain pathways for wealth. I thought it very important in this time of economic uncertainty to reshare this interview from December 2020. I hope you enjoy it, my friend. Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. There are more than 12 million women-owned businesses in the U.S., and 88% of those women earn less than $100,000 per year in revenue. And if that weren't enough, the wage gap between women and men business owners is 260% wider than women in corporate, with women earning only 30 cents to the dollar. And today I'm joined by Barbara Hewson. She is the leading authority on women, wealth, and power. And in addition to being a best-selling author, she is a financial therapist, teacher, and wealth coach, literally helping millions take charge of their finances and their lives. Barbara is the foremost expert on empowering women to live up to their financial and personal potential. My friend, you are in for a real treat today as Barbara leads us through why women undervalue themselves, the cost of that in the long term, and how you can rewire your worth and rewire your wealth. Welcome, Barbara.
Oh, thank you, Deborah. Thank you very much.
We're so excited to have you on Life After Corporate today. And before we dive into women undervaluing their worth and how to rewire for wealth, please tell us, our listeners, about how you got to where you are today. Why did you choose women and wealth as your life's mission?
I didn't choose it. I think it chose me. This was not something I thought I'd ever do. I was born in a wealthy family. My father was the R of H&R Block. And the only advice he ever gave me about money was don't worry, which I thought was great advice. I didn't understand money. I just liked to spend it. And of course, under those words, don't worry, was the unspoken assumption there'll always be a man to take care of you, which made me really happy because there always was. There was my father. And then I married a man who was a stockbroker. So he was perfect. But what I found out very early in my marriage is that he was a compulsive gambler. And over the course of our 15-year marriage, I find out many, many times a year he was gambling my money, my inheritance away. And the insane part, the absolutely insane part, is that I continued to let him manage the money because that's how terrified I was by anything financial. Finally, after 15 years, we got a divorce and I decided money's not my thing. I do not want to deal with money. Well, I have this theory that if you don't deal with your money will deal with you. And in the next year, I got tax bills for way over $1 million. In fact, taxes my ex didn't pay for illegal deals he got us in, and my signature was on everything. I signed whatever he told me to sign. I did not have $1 million, not even close to it. My ex had left the country and my father wouldn't lend me the money. And that's when I knew I had to get smart. I had three daughters. I was not going to raise them on the street.
Oh my God.
So I started reading books and I started, you know, going to classes and my eyes would glaze over and my brain would fog up. But I believe when you have a commitment, when you are totally committed down to your toes, no back door, I walk through fire to make it happen. That's how I felt. I was not going to raise my girls on the street. I was a journalist writing for the San Francisco Business Times, and I got hired for a writing project to interview women who were smart with money. And those interviews changed my life. I not only got smart about money, but I wrote my first book, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, and the rest is history.
So Barbara, that's such a fabulous story. And, you know, I think we're not too far apart in how we were raised. And it was just something that women weren't taught. And what was so funny about my part of the story is that my father was a CFO. I mean, he was paid to be really smart with money. And also, it was a big focus of his in the household. So one of the things that I didn't want to talk about, I didn't want to deal with, was budgeting and anything having to do with money. And so it's so funny, but I wasn't raised. He didn't share with me how to save or how to invest. It was only, you know, why are you spending that? Why are you focusing on that instead of saving your money? But he didn't really share the how. And so I think for a lot of women, we weren't raised with this financial savviness to be able to effectively manage money or understand our worth.
Exactly.
Yeah. How do we change that now? And we're generations of women, and I've seen this with women in their 60s and their 50s and their 40s and their 30s. When it comes time to leaving the safety net of the corporate world, which is kind of like leaving the household because you're taken care of, you're given a paycheck, maybe you get a bonus, you might even get stock options at a certain level. But then you make this leap to entrepreneurship and suddenly you're on your own. And there's this feeling of like, I'm not sure how to price my services. I don't know what I'm worth. And they undercharge. Do you have any insight into women undervalue? Talk to us about that.
Women are notorious under earners. We give away our skills, our experience, our knowledge for free or bargain prices because we don't believe we're worth more. We devalue ourselves. And another reason why we tend to be under earners is because we're notoriously codependent. We put everybody else's needs before ourselves. I mean, and not just our families or our friends, but perfect strangers. And every time we go to put ourselves first, which is a key to overcoming under earning, every time we go to put ourselves first, we feel uncomfortable. It doesn't feel right. We feel guilty. Well, the number one requirement to go to the next level in earnings or in anything is the willingness to be uncomfortable, the willingness to do what doesn't feel good, doesn't feel right. I ask under earners, when's the last time you did something that you were scared to do? And they'll, you know, scratch their head. High earners, they just say all the time, if it's not illegal or immoral, I just say yes. And that's the key to overcoming under earning, is the willingness to stretch beyond what feels comfortable to what may seem impossible.
Wow. So it feels scary to step into your value, to step into your worth. In your book, Sacred Success, there's a part that I love. I've underlined it. I've double lined it on the sides, is that in Sacred Success, the primary goal is achieving greatness. Greatness fueled by passion, by purpose, doing what you were born to do. It's why you're here. It's the truth of who you are. It's what your soul yearns for. And it's what the world desperately needs. And greatness is where your power resides. So how do we connect our greatness to our financial value?
Can I say a little backstory to that?
Sure.
So in around 2009, yeah, it was 2009, I had written Overcoming Under-Earning, Secrets of Six-Figure Women. I was making six figures. I've been a chronic under-earner all my life. So finally, in my 50s, I'm finally making six figures. I'm feeling really good. And one night, I had an idea. I kind of sat up straight up in bed, and I thought, I have a new goal. I want to make millions, help millions, and give millions. And that was my new goal. And I knew exactly how I was going to do it. I was going to interview women who made millions, and that would be my next book. So I started interviewing women who made millions, no problem finding them. It's a great experience. 3 years later, I had no book. I was nowhere close to making millions. In fact, 2009 was the worst year I'd had in a long time. And I remember talking to a coach and she said, Barbara, you're too into doing. You need time for just being. And I went and took a 4-day retreat. And I remember waking up in the morning of that retreat and looking at the ceiling and just feeling like such a loser, such a hypocrite. Here I was coaching women on how to up their income. And I was doing terrible. And I just felt like crap. And I got up and I started to walk to the bathroom. And all of a sudden, there was a voice in my head, as clear as my voice is now. And the voice said, Barbara, go for greatness. And I went like, huh? Greatness is not a word that I normally use. I ran back to bed. I got out my journal and I started writing. I was so hungry to make millions, but that was coming from my ego, who wanted to feel worthy. But my soul wanted greatness. And so I really thought long and hard that day, what is greatness? And I saw a quote by Harold Buchner that I paraphrase now. And greatness is that place where your deep gladness, where what you were put on this earth to do, meets the world's deep hunger. And so greatness is purpose-driven. It's not profit-driven. Profit is definitely a primary goal, definitely a goal, but it's doing what you're here to do for your own bliss and the benefit of others while being richly rewarded. So one of the things that I found of these women who were making 7 and 8 figures is they were doing it very differently than the world models. And part of that was how purpose-driven. Mm-hmm. Did I answer your question, Deborah?
Yeah. So the connection between purpose and profits, I think, is where we're going in this interview today, because identifying your purpose is where it's at. And someday we'll have coffee and conversation over what happens on day 4 when you're on a retreat, because truthfully, that is exactly what happened and how I discovered my purpose too. And I specifically remember it was day 4 on a silent meditation retreat, but that's not instrumental to our conversation today. But the connection between purpose and profits, because later on in Sacred Success, you talked about the 3 levels of financial development, survival, stability, and affluence. And most women entrepreneurs that I know who are purpose-driven are stuck firmly in survival mode. So
let me explain the 3. Okay. So there's 3 levels of financial development. There is survival, stability, and affluence. Survival is not enough. Stability is just enough, and affluence is more than enough. To go from survival to stability, you must have a profit motive. You must love money. You must want to make money. That is your primary goal, profit. Okay?
Yes.
That means, and for most who are in survival, that is very scary. But always, always, the key to success is going where you fear. To go from stability to affluence, profit is no longer your primary goal. Oh, yes, it is definitely an intended outcome. You definitely want to make money, but your primary goal is now greatness, greatness which is purpose-driven. But you must have that profit motive firmly in place, and you must be able to strategize so your purpose becomes profitable. And that's what I noticed in too many entrepreneurs, especially when they first get started, is they're not strategizing. They're pouring their money into their business like it's an investment, which is a very, very, very volatile investment. They're throwing their money in, but they're not strategizing. They're not keeping one eye on the bottom line while the other is on their vision and connecting those two.
You're speaking my language, Barbara, because you know, if you're not profit driven. I always say no money, no mission. You really don't get to make an impact with your work if you don't have the profit. And what I find with most women entrepreneurs is the reason why they want to make a profit is so that they can give back to others.
Well, you know something? Research has shown over and over and over again that one of the biggest differences between men and women is that men, no matter how much they have, this is generally speaking, no matter how much they have, they are very profit driven. They are really driven by profits, perks, and prestige. Women, once we are financially stable, we have a roof over our head, food on the table, we feel financially stable, money no longer drives us. Yeah, we want it. But what drives us, what motivates us, is the opportunity to make a difference, to help others. And that's beautiful. But what happens is on our opportunity to help others, we forget that a profit is important. But I also want to say something, because I just need to say it. There's a lot of talk about profit, but there's a big difference between profit and wealth. And I would like to have more women entrepreneurs, not just focus on the profit, but focus on creating wealth, focus on upping their net worth, because you don't have to make a big profit to create wealth.
I know. And in your book, Sacred Success, you told so many wonderful stories about women who didn't earn a lot, but were focused on investing and ended their lives or at the end of their careers with a great deal of wealth. And that was fascinating for me, that it's not about how much you earn, it's what you do with the money you make.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because so many of my clients are high earners who have nothing to show for it.
Right. I've been there myself, been there, done that, have the t-shirt, been a consumer instead of an investor. And that has changed recently. And I'm really grateful for that, of really rewiring myself for wealth. And I can't wait for the book to come out. But when women are stuck in this place of not feeling good enough, not charging what they're worth, or not even if they're in the corporate world, not even asking for the money, you know, women notoriously under-negotiate their salaries. So they're getting underpaid no matter where they are in the corporate world or entrepreneurship. So how do we rewire ourselves for our self-worth, which in my opinion is the precursor to being rewiring for wealth? I mean, is that right? Am I connecting those two points the right way?
Well, you don't have to have worth, a sense of worth, to rewire, but you can rewire the worth in there.
Okay, tell us about that. That sounds juicy.
So our brain controls our behavior. And so much of financial education is based on changing our behavior. But the problem is, when our brain is wired a certain way, it is next to impossible to change that wiring, to go against it. Everything screams out, stop, don't do that, don't do that. But our brain, which controls our behavior, but our brain is controlled by our mind. Now, the brain is a physical organ in the body, but the mind is not a physical organ. It is an intangible entity that is a source of thoughts and feelings. So every time we have a thought or a feeling, it triggers a chemical, electrical impulses, the signals in the brain that either digs the neural pathway that responds to those thoughts deeper or starts building the new one. So it's the key to creating, to building our self-worth is to weaken those pathways that say, you're not enough, you're not worth anything. My pathway says, you don't have what it takes. That's what my long time pathway said, is to change that neural pathway by training our mind. And so what I did about 6 or 7 years ago is I discovered neuroscience, and I started incorporating it into my work. And I came up with a 3-step process. Very simple, but rewiring the brain takes so much effort. This 3 steps just must be repeated over and over and over again. So shall I tell you the 3 steps?
Please.
Okay, let me just tell you briefly the 3 steps. I will talk a little bit more about them, and then I'll give you an example of how to apply them. Okay?
Sounds great.
So the 3 steps to training your mind to rewire your brain are recognize, reframe, and respond differently. Recognize means to start recognizing or observing those negative, self-defeating thoughts you're having. And they're there all the time. But to change anything, you have to be aware. So the key is just to notice, but to notice, to observe the self-defeating thought, not with criticism or judgment, but curiosity. Isn't that interesting? I'm having a thought about not being enough. Not, I am not enough. Oh, I'm thinking I'm not enough. No. What you want to do is separate yourself from your thought, because your thought is not true. Your thought is something you picked up a long time ago and you just keep thinking. It's habitual and it keeps going. That thought keeps releasing those chemicals, little stumbles that keep digging that not enough neural pathway deeper and deeper. So we want to change that and start building a new neural pathway. So you first notice, observe, with curiosity. Isn't that interesting? I'm having a thought that I have to have both Prada shoes. I'm having a thought that I can't charge that much. Okay, that's the first step. Just recognize. The second step is when you recognize it, you reframe it. How can I see it differently? This is really a superpower. When you can reframe something, you will change your reality. You will literally change your reality. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. And reframe is like an affirmation that you say over and over again. So recognize, reframe, and then respond differently. Do what you don't want to do. Do what doesn't feel comfortable. Do what you're scared to do. So recognize, reframe, and respond differently over and over again. And I'm going to use myself as an example on how I applied this. So about a month and a half ago, my team and I decided we were going to do a project, a new project. I had never done this before. It was a challenge. It was a five-day challenge, a Rewire for Wealth challenge. I had never done a challenge. I didn't know what a challenge was. I was terrified. I had to write the script and write these emails. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. And my old wiring came back. I don't have what it takes. It came back fiercely. I don't have what it takes. I thought, okay, I need to rewire this because I never really officially rewired that. So I recognized, oh, I'm having a feeling that I don't have what it takes. I'm having a thought. Isn't that interesting? I know this is not the truth. I know it. I know this has been wired in my brain since I was very young. Isn't this interesting? I noticed and I reframed it. And at first I thought, sometimes you can reframe it by just saying the opposite. I have what it takes, but that didn't feel right. So I kept saying, how can I see this differently? And it came to me and I wrote it down. I have a post-it note right in front of me. I wrote, I can handle this. And so every time I had that thought, I don't have what it takes, I just said to myself, I can handle it. And I had to have that little attitude in there. I can handle this. And then I did what I didn't want to do. And that was write the script, which I felt like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But I wrote it and I did it. And after a couple of days, it became easier and easier. And I didn't have to say, I can handle this as often. And there was less resistance in my brain. And actually, the project was really, really fun. But I wouldn't have done it. I would not have done it at all if I didn't use it as an experiment to apply the rewiring to my life.
You know, it's such a great story. And I know all of my clients in the Launch Lab are nodding their heads up and down about that story because it's the work that they're doing, right? So stepping into greatness and all that discomfort and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not good enough. But the reward, right? The wealth is on the other side of doing what feels uncomfortable and moving beyond your, what I call stinking thinking, right? So those thoughts that are thinking you, really, you're not even actively thinking those thoughts. They're happening on their own accord and being able to recognize them. And so one of the ways that I recognize those thoughts is I've been doing morning pages for probably 25 years now, and being able to observe what's going on in my own mental hoarder's house and understanding, you know, what's driving the bus here? And is it true? And can I create a bridge thought or an affirmation, as you call it, to get me to the next spot? And then going ahead and doing it anyway. So I don't think there's any way around it, really. If you're going to rewire yourself for success, that's the only way to go.
I think the important part is, I don't know, it's like raising the hood and looking underneath. It's exactly what you said, Deborah. Like if you're in a situation where you're not making the money you want, you're not having the success you want, things aren't going the way you want. The key is to look under the hood. What is going on under there? And to ask yourself some questions. The question I always ask myself is, why don't I want this success? What is the payoff for me staying where I am? And I know for years, people will come and say, what do I do? What do I do? But I know what I've learned from successful women, that's not really the first question to ask. The first question to ask is, what do I need to let go of? And I saw when I was interviewing successful women, that's one of the things I learned profoundly. It was pretty profound. Is there seemed to be always something, and I didn't expect this, something they needed to let go of. And it could be something tangible, like where they're living or their job or a spouse. But oftentimes it was something intangible, like a belief or an attitude or a self-image. And often that is what's holding us back.
That was so insightful. And I remember reading that. And I remember sitting with that with my journal for a couple of days. And I want our listeners to really tune in to the golden nugget that you just dropped there, which is we tell ourselves that we want some specific outcome, we want some specific experience, but the behavior and the belief aren't lining up behind it. And so the question you ask yourself is, why don't I really want this? Right? Because if I really wanted it, right, you'd align behind it.
See, the thing is, our brains, from the beginning of time, from the time we humans first came on this planet, our human brain was designed for one purpose and one purpose only. And that is the same purpose it carries with it today. And that purpose is to stay alive, to survive. And so what happens is when we get scared, it's like a saber-toothed tiger is coming after us, and which it's not, but it's like, and we go into fight, flight, or freeze. And the important thing, all acts of self-sabotage, all resistance, anytime, it's always an act of self-protection. So when I'm not getting what I want, if I get it, why will I not feel safe? Why will I not feel safe? And this is important because a lot of attention has been paid to the law of attraction. The law of attraction says, if I just focus on what I want and I just imagine it and I just picture it and I just feel the excitement about it, I'll get it. So we're saying, I want money. I want more money. I want more money. I want more success, but we're not getting it, which happens a lot. Because what's not being talked about is what I call the law of congruence. And the fact is, you get what you really want, not what you ask for. So if you're saying, I want to be successful, or I want more money, or I really want to be wealthy. But if you think wealthy people are bad and success is scary and you'll lose everything if you had the money, then what you want is not really the money or the success. You want to be safe, you want to be liked, or whatever. So it's important to get in what is the conflicting desire that is keeping you from getting what you want. Because you wouldn't have the desire in the first place if it wasn't yours to have. I believe the universe gives us our desires, and when we don't get them, it's because we have a conflicting desire.
That's so fascinating. And when you said that, it rang so, so true with me. I don't get it because there's something preventing me. I won't feel safe if I get it. So tell us a story about one of your clients. Obviously, don't divulge their name or anything like that. But can you tell us a story of someone you worked with who was not congruent with what she wanted? And once she cleared up that conflict, what changed for her?
Okay. It just came to me because she just had me on her podcast today. So it was very interesting. See how far she's come. I worked with her 2 years ago. She was in my Rewire mentorship program. And so she was extremely successful. Extremely. She did corporate events, made a ton of money. And she had nothing. She had nothing. She had like 400 and some thousand in debt. And it was crazy. She knew it was crazy. She was so stressed. And so we started looking back. And her father was an inventor who made a lot of money, but he always spent it. He always spent it. And she grew up with never enough. Even though a lot came in, there was never enough. So we looked at that. And she said, I've been in therapy for 11 years. I know that I'm repeating my father's thing, but I don't know why I'm doing it. So we went a little deeper. And I said to her, what would it be like if you were wealthy? What would it feel like? And I said, don't answer that. Just sit with it. So she comes back to me the next time. And she said, oh my God, I started asking, I'm wealthy. What would it be like? And she started having these images of this lonely, shriveled up old lady driving a Cadillac with a fur coat, but all by herself. And she didn't realize that she equated wealth with loneliness and alienation and isolation. She had no idea where she got that. So we said, how can you reframe that? So she saw her thought. So I helped, how can we reframe it? So she went out, this is brilliant of her, and she decided she wanted to find in her community women who were wealthy, that were not lonely, shriveled up, old ladies, old spinster. And she did. She started finding these real, she called them juicy. They were so juicy and they were rich and they were happy. So what happened is she came after that, she saw She reframed it to, wealth can be fun. Wealth can be wonderful. However she reframed it. And the interesting thing that happened is once, because the brain will only see and only do what confirms its belief. It's called confirmation bias. She changed her belief. And in changing her belief, the most remarkable thing happened. She had a line of credit that was like a couple $100,000. And she actually had the money tucked away in a bank account she forgot about, that she could pay it off. She saw that she was paying this financial bookkeeper, CPA, way too much money, way too much money. So she canceled them and she found somebody. So she started finding all these ways to cut costs. And I just talked to her now, 2 years later, and she has, her revenues are $1 million. She never made $1 million before. Because it's what happens when you shift your beliefs. Your brain finds ways to solve the once insoluble problems.
That's such an amazing story. You know, first finding proof that other people have what you want and they're not lonely and shriveled up and whatever that equivalent is for our listeners here today. And then once her mindset was actually shifted, she started looking at things a different way, experiencing things a different way, and things just started showing up for her.
That's right. She started.
That's that congruence, right?
Yeah. It's a congruent. Her brain started finding solutions because it was safe. It was safe for her to be financially responsible because she saw she could have, her words, a juicy life.
So much of what gets in our way from living the lives that we want to live is because our brains don't feel like it's safe to go there. Is that right?
Yes. Our brains are wired. It's a decision we make. See, we learn very early how to survive. And as a child, the way a child survives is to get love, attention, and approval. So we learn very early how to get love, attention, and approval and avoid disapproval and punishment. But what keeps us safe as a child will suffocate us as an adult. So as a child, I learned you do not talk about money. You do not talk about money. But that very thing is what kept me, what suffocated me, what absolutely did me in, is because I never told anyone that my husband was gambling a money away. Not a therapist I was seeing 3 times a week, not the banker, not my parents, not anyone. So we need to relearn what safety means. And really, rewiring is simply unlearning all that we've been taught about how to be safe.
And that unlearning are the things that we experience as children, as you said, that were either implicitly or explicitly modeled for us. So either implicitly modeled by your parents' behavior or other people who influenced, were highly influential in your life, or explicitly told to you, you know, like rich people are bad or rich people are evil, other things. So in my household, I guess because my dad was an accountant and a CPA, the message I got was money was in limited quantity and it wasn't okay to have fun with it. And so once I got out on my own and started making money, I decided that I was going to make it okay to have fun with money. But that didn't serve me very well because I made a lot of money and I spent a lot of money and didn't have a lot to show for at the end of the day.
Yeah. But sometimes we have to go to the other extreme to learn. So the fact is that you had fun, but you realized that fun was not really fun in the long run. It was temporary fun. And it taught you a wonderful lesson. I remember I asked my father never gave me any advice about money, never. He did give me one piece of advice. I remember saying to him, Dad, I want to learn how to invest. I want to learn how to manage money. And I said, what advice do you have for me? And he said something that I hated until I realized how smart it was. He said, make lots of mistakes.
Mm.
And I realized that's really important. What you want to avoid is making a mistake with a whole lot of money. But you want to make a mistake that you can afford to lose. But even a mistake that, you know, as you learn, it had its definite consequences, it taught you something. So mistakes are our best teachers.
Absolutely, because it's the learning, right? It's the learning that comes comes from them. So let's bring this home for our listeners here today. As you know, rewiring for wealth means that you need to rewire your brain. You need to align behind what you really want and ask yourself some of those difficult questions. If this is what I want and I don't have it, then why don't I really want it? And what are those thoughts and those beliefs that are circling around in my mind that are preventing me from getting what I want? And getting curious.
Well summed up.
Oh, thank you. So Barbara, before we let you go, and this has been really such an honor to share this time with you here today, what else would you like our listeners to know about your new book, Rewired for Wealth? I know I pre-ordered my copy yesterday, so I can't wait to get it. So what else do they need to know about this neuroplasticity and rewiring yourself for wealth? And yeah, final thoughts.
So I have on my website, Barbara-Huson.com, I offer a free ebook that is like, it gives you a taste. It shows you how to rewire. It goes through the three steps. It explains the brain. So it's a short, it's very easy to read. So, and it's free. So why don't you go on there and order that free ebook? Mine comes out January 12th. What else can I tell you? Can I talk about my group that I have, my online community?
I was just going to prompt you because I am in that online community and haven't been able to be as active as I want to be just because of my schedule. But yes, I've noticed that you're gathering up a tribe of people who are ready to rewire. So tell us about the Facebook group and what people can get from joining.
So it was my dream for years and years and years and years to create a community where women could come together and safely, candidly, openly talk about money as women. And because creating wealth and getting savvy, financially savvy, can be a very emotional process. It's not just practical, it's emotional and it's a spiritual process. And so a couple of years ago, I created the Wealth Connection, in which we have, it's a tribe of women who are all committed to really taking charge of their money. And by taking charge of their money, they're taking charge of their life. And they're at all, both ends of the spectrum and everything in between. But it's just, it's been marvelous. We talk two times a month. I do coaching online. We just had a book club today. We just all kinds of activities. I'm doing a masterclass on Rewire Masterclass, all kinds of activities. And we just talk openly and freely about money. So I would like anybody to go to my website and check it out.
We'll put that in show notes. It's Barbara-Huson, HUSON.com, and join the Wealth Connection on Facebook. We'll put that link in the show notes as well. And Barbara, what I've noticed about you is you are so incredibly generous with your support and your expertise in your community. And what stands out to me is how much you sincerely care about all the women. Yes. Yes.
And Deborah, you know that because I keep asking you questions on the Facebook page and you don't answer me. But I'm not getting off your case. I'm not.
I know. You are so on my case and I know it. And I'm not on the Facebook group that often, but whenever I do, I see a message from Barbara, you know, so why are you a 4 and not a 5? You know, if you're not a 5, then you won't change. So it's been a pleasure for me because yes, it's the safety zone. I'm no different than any of my listeners in Life After Corporate. It's that safety zone of change is hard and it requires rewiring. But I have been in and out of tremendous amounts of debt over time. And making that decision to finally show up differently requires that you take the time. Number one, I guess the only thing I would add is to be kind to yourself because this is a process. To get support because no one goes there alone. So Barbara is an incredible resource. You know, I recommend right now, start with Sacred Success, pre-order Rewired for Wealth, and join the Wealth Connection on Facebook so that you can get the support that you need. Hey, if I am brave enough to do something which is my last frontier. I've done my health, my spirituality. I've launched a business. I've created a multiple six-figure business on my way to a seven-figure business. And I can be vulnerable and show up in a group that's somewhat uncomfortable for me because I want this to change. So if you're there and if you're tired of undervaluing yourself, underpricing your services, not showing up in a way that is supportive of your financial future. And let's face it, half of the women over 50 in this community are alone. They're divorced. And so there's no one but you who is going to shift the way you think and the way you behave about money. So Barbara, this has been like pure joy for me. And thank you so much for your generosity.
Well, thank you for having me. I always love talking to you. I don't get to see you very often, so it's really a treat when I get to actually hear your voice.
I promise I'll show up in our live sessions more often. That's it for now, my friend. Till next time, thank you for listening. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.